You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. This is episode 73, and I am recording on Friday, March 25th. Have I checked in since I started taking hockey lessons? I don't think so. I am still here. So are my teeth. And I will have had 3 lessons by the time this airs. I almost fell backwards once, but I caught myself, and I'll have you know I was moved up to the beginning intermediate class, but I feel like a complete interloper because the 3 other people in that class have already taken it. My Achilles heel in this whole endeavor is the fact that I don't get to practice between lessons because who has the time and who has the ice? My UCLA class is officially over, and next quarter I'm teaching 2 private courses, one an intermediate novel writing course and the second an advanced novel writing course. There are still 2 more spaces available in the intermediate course, so if you're interested, shoot me an email at booksaremypeople@gmail.com or go to my author website, www.jennifercalogeras.com, and you can send me an email through the link there. And you can also sign up for my tri-quarterly newsletter where I talk about new classes and what I'm reading and what I'm teaching. Starting in the fall, I will be running some small workshop clubs monthly where participants can, in small groups, get 25 pages of writing of their novel chapters or short stories critiqued by myself and a few fellow writers. Again, visit my website for more information about how to join a workshop club with all the benefits of writer's workshop without any of the homework or assignments of a class. I'm doing an author swap of my first 100 pages of my new suspense novel with a friend who's also working on a suspense novel, so I've been plugging away at that. You need a lot of self-discipline to be a writer, and it's so helpful to have an accountability partner, or a few, as I happen to be lucky enough to have. And since you've been listening to my family's latest career move as extras in hockey movies and TV shows, my kids and husband were recently in Mighty Ducks 2, and now my husband, who has an actual full-time job running a company, was asked back to play a referee. So he was up at 3:45 in the morning to make his call time on the rink by 5 a.m. And this time they even put some makeup on him. And I am just so tickled by this. I don't know whether or not to call it a career move or a hobby. And I just can't wait till the show comes out. And he's been asked to go back again next week. Are you all watching The Dropout and super pumped, and the one about WeWork? I don't remember what that one's called because I haven't had time to start it, but they're all sort of blending together in my mind as the same show, but I've definitely been enjoying The Dropout the most. That's the Elizabeth Holmes story, which I believe was a podcast, and then there was also the book, of course, by John Carreyrou called Bad Blood that I loved. If you are interested in doing a deeper dive down the Elizabeth Holmes wormhole. So that's what's happening in my personal life, and now it's time for some bookish news. But first, if you've been listening to my show and you haven't yet rated it, please give me the gift of your rating. It's a great and easy way to spread the word and let others know you like Books Are My People. Thank you so much. A graphic adaptation of David Bowie's The Man Who Fell to Earth is coming out in the fall. In the 1976 movie, which I have never seen, Bowie is an alien who lands on Earth in hopes of saving his own planet. Subsequently, he becomes very successful because he's an inventor who has all these inventive ways of doing things, since he's from another planet. But with his growing success comes the pitfalls of said success, and soon the US government is out to get him. Is this a good movie? Should I watch it? Has anyone out there seen it? Send me an email at booksaremypeople@gmail.com. The National Books Critics Circle has named their 2021 award winners. The National Book Critics Circle stands apart from other prizes because the recipients are chosen by book critics rather than committees made up of authors or academics. And the organization's annual awards, which are typically given out in the spring to works published the previous year, are open to books published both in England and the United States. I won't mention all the winners here, but I will leave a link in the show notes for the full list. But here are some highlights. Anthony Vesna's So's short story collection After Parties, which centers on the lives of Cambodian Americans in California, has won. The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois, a novel by Honoré Fanon Jeffers that explores class, colorism, and privilege through the story of a young Black woman growing up in Georgia in the late 20th century, and the story of her ancestors, has won. And Rebecca Donner, who won the Biography Prize for All the Frequent Troubles of Our Days, the true story of the American woman at the heart of the German resistance to Hitler, has also won. I raved about this book on episode 68, and I've been trying to get in touch with her to have her on the show, but now I see why she has been otherwise occupied. So congratulations, Rebecca. And last but not least today, one of my favorite topics, book adaptations, coming soon. Sally Rooney's Conversation with Friends will be a 12-episode series. I'll leave a link in the show notes to the teaser. And Jemima Kirk from Girls will be in that. I love her. Conversations with Friends premieres in May on Hulu and BBC Three. Universal has acquired rights to Nita Prose's not-yet-released debut novel, The Maid. I talked about this book on episode 67 if you want to learn more about it. I think it would be fun to read it before seeing any of these adaptations. And Lauren Bukes's 2013 novel, The Shining Girls, is going to be an Apple TV miniseries coming out this spring. I talked about that book on episode 37. I absolutely loved it. It's a time-traveling serial killer who has to kill girls with a light about them in different eras. And I'll leave a link to the trailer in the show notes. That's all the news from me. And now on to today's guest. Sarah Boccaccini Meadows is a print designer and illustrator living in Brooklyn, New York, originally from the rolling hills of the Peak District, England. She splits her time between working as a textile designer, illustrator, and artist, using watercolor and gouache to create quirky illustrations. Sarah has long been a supporter of climate action and women's rights, and is dedicated to using her art to make a difference. And she's here today to speak with us about her most recent illustrated books, Grow, A Family Guide to Plants and How to Grow Them, and Things You Can Do, How to Fight Climate Change and Reduce Waste. So hello, Sarah.
Hello, Jennifer. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. Can you tell listeners where you are calling in from today?
Yes, I'm calling in from Brooklyn in New York City.
How's the weather there?
It's actually surprisingly sunny. Yeah, it feels like the first day of spring.
Oh, that's so nice. I love New York in the spring. It's perfect. So I've been a longtime Instagram follower of yours. And last summer, when Sarah had her work showing at a gallery in Los Angeles, I went downtown with a friend to see it and I introduced myself. And so that is where we connected. Her work is just so bold and feels very influenced by textiles. And it just always makes me feel very cheerful when I look at it.
Oh, thank you, Jen.
So can you tell us the titles of both your recently published books and what they're about?
So the first book is Grow, and it's a family guide to plants, and it explains how to grow them at home. It's ideally for children aged 8 to 12, but it really appeals to everyone. I've illustrated 15 chapters, each chapter detailing a plant and facts about that plant, history, and then a how to grow section. The second book is called Things You Can Do, How to Fight Climate Change and Reduce Waste. And it was written by Eduardo Garcia, who is a climate journalist. And it's a user-friendly guide to the things that we can do every day to fight climate change. And in every chapter, it digs into issues, exploring how everyday choices lead to carbon emissions, and then delivers things you can do to make positive change, such as reducing waste, saving energy, and zero waste practices. And it's also fully illustrated by me, which hopefully makes it more accessible to read. I don't know about you, but I've found that a lot of climate books can be quite wordy and not always like easily digestible. So the hope is that with it being illustrated, it is more a more enjoyable read and encourages people to take action.
I'm going to post the covers online, but they're just so lush and gorgeous. And I commend you on using your art to help make the world a better place. And I think I need your plant book because we have a lot of plants growing outside successfully when I leave them alone. It's the indoor plants that do not have so much success, but we have a Satsuma tree inside, and the first little baby buds of the Satsumas are starting. So I feel very good about that.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Well, there's lots of accessible how-tos, and a lot of them are for indoors. Like, even if you just have a windowsill, there's a chapter on kale, so it can show you how to grow like kale and lettuce on your windowsill.
So as an author, I understand the publishing process from an author's perspective, but can you demystify the publishing process as an illustrator? How do you find authors to work with? Does an author approach you, or does your agent or publishing company match you up with an author?
Yeah, so the process has been quite different with both of these books. The first book that I started was the climate book, Things You Can Do. And Eduardo, the author, had approached me with the idea. So he'd been writing a column for the New York Times on climate issues and the things that we can do to make a difference. And he had a lot of research and had decided he wanted to create a book from this. And he felt that if it was illustrated, it would be more accessible. So he'd reached out to me, and he was in New York and I was in New York. So we met up and we put a pitch together. He'd already got an agent. So we worked with the agent and started pitching it to different publishers. And luckily we got a lot of interest. This was back in, November 2019. So that was the very start. And then we got a publishing deal in April 2020. And it basically took us a year and a half to complete the book. And we really worked very closely. We were on the phone and WhatsApp almost every day. And, you know, Eduardo would send me the text for each chapter, and then we'd discuss the art and illustrations, and, you know, go back and forth on sketches. And then once we kind of got everything together, we sent it to our publisher and they passed it on to the graphics team. And then they put everything in layouts and went from there. Grow was a completely different process. So the publisher, Magic Cat, who have been amazing, I love them. They reached out to me with the idea, and they already had an author who was a horticulturalist, Riz Reyes. He is in Seattle, and he is very knowledgeable about plants, much more than I am. So he would send the text to Magic Cat, and then their graphic designer, Nick, she would send me an idea for a layout and some picture inspiration, and then I would sketch into it, and I would send the sketch for each layout, and then get the approval, and then it would take me about a week or so to paint everything up and pass it back to them. So yeah, quite different processes for each book, but I really enjoyed both of them.
That's fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. How would you describe your artwork, and what materials do you use?
I describe my work as quite playful. I have quite a quirky and unique style. I draw a lot from nature. I'm inspired by different landscapes and also just the different things in everyday life. I mainly use watercolor and gouache. I've also been using acrylic recently as I've been doing more work on canvas. Day to day, though, I use paper, and I also carry a lot of sketchbooks. I've got a whole library of sketchbooks. I carry them wherever I go, and I find them like great to look back on for inspiration for new projects. I really just want my work, I think I've mentioned before, but to make a positive change. That's a biggest goal.
Just as a budding artist myself who loves gouache, I mean, I discovered gouache maybe 2 years ago and it's just my favorite medium, but I made the mistake of putting it all into pans. So it got hard and it's not that like, you know, that milky, creamy substance that I see people. So do you keep yours hard or creamy? And what kind of gouache do you use?
Okay, I have a little trick for this. So one of the gouaches that I really love, they have some great colors, is the Holbein Acrylla gouache.
Okay.
And that does go hard quite quickly. So if you put a little bit of water in it, and also putting it in the fridge helps. It keeps it, you can keep it for longer that way.
Oh. And
then there are gouache brands. It's the same, I guess it's the same brand, but a different style that doesn't dry as quickly, or you can kind of re-wet it. But I honestly, I mix a lot of my gouaches together and my watercolors. So in the end, they end up kind of going hard. So yeah, but try the fridge trick. That's a good one.
Well, I think a lot of our Blue Shine Art artists are listening to this podcast today because they were very excited that you were coming on the show. Aww. So I know they will take the gouache tips to heart. What does a day in the life of a visual artist and illustrator look like?
Yeah, so I'd say it's quite different depending on what project I have on. At the moment, I'm working on a new book and I find working from home is best because I have like a nice clean desk. So this morning I dropped my daughter at school. I cycled back along the river in Brooklyn and got a coffee and then get my paints out and start working for a few hours. I obviously stopped to take this call and chat to you. So, you know, I tend to have meetings at different times in the week, and yeah, depending, like sometimes I go, I have a little studio which I tend to use for my personal work. There's other artists, mainly ceramicists, that work in there, and it's a little more, it's a bit more cluttered. I wouldn't say that I can't always get my head clear in that space, but I find it a really fun environment. It kind of inspires me for more of my personal work. Yeah, and so I'd say, yeah, like New York, when I'm here, that tends to be my day-to-day. But in the last few years, I've spent a lot of time in Los Angeles and in the UK with my family. And the days really change, like, depending on the location that I'm in.
It sounds like a dream. I know it's a lot of hard work, and when it's not the profession that you're working in, it's very easy to romanticize the life of a visual artist, but it sounds incredible. And can you share with us what you are working on next?
Yes. So I mentioned earlier, I'm working on a new book. It's a companion title to Grow, and it's called Glow. And it's a way into exploring the night sky for children. And it's written by a NASA science writer called Nolia Gonzalez. I've not yet been in touch with Nolia, but I'm working with Magic Cat on the chapters right now. So I'm very excited for that. It's going to come out in 2023. I have also just finished a map project. I started it last summer for a house in the UK. Called Chatsworth House. It's a beautiful estate where they filmed Pride and Prejudice, and they have lots of amazing exhibitions. They have a garden, a maze, and lots of events for children there. And I've been going since I was a child. So I was honored actually when they asked me if I would illustrate a new map for their garden. So just finished that. I'm excited to see it in print. And then just preparing for a few book events. I'm doing Edinburgh Book Festival in the summertime. Have a workshop for children there in August. And so that's part of the Grow book. And then me and Eduardo, we have an event at Brooklyn Public Library in May. And that's for the Things You Can Do and Climate Solutions.
Amazing. Well, keep me posted on your public events and I will put them on my Instagram so people in the area can come say hi.
Thank you so much. I absolutely will.
Thanks so much for chatting with us. And now we're going to move on to the books. So Sarah has brought three books that she would love to recommend, and we'll take turns starting with Sarah. What do you have first?
Yes. So the first book I want to recommend is called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I read this book at the very start of lockdown. I was in the UK, and I think with all the anxiety going on in the world, I was feeling a little bit anxious, and I'd heard some positive things about this book. Found it super fascinating. The author really gives ideas about how to get a good night's sleep and why it isn't so important, and uses all his research and knowledge to overcome the life-threatening risks that are associated with sleep deprivation. I just found it amazing, like the importance of sleep. You know, it's just as important as eating and breathing, and without it, we just wouldn't survive. So, yeah, that's my first book. The name is Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker.
Well, I look forward to reading that one in the middle of the night when I'm having another bout of insomnia. My first pick is Disorientation by Elaine Shea Chow, published on March 22nd. It is about 29-year-old Ingrid Yang, who has been painstakingly researching poet Xia Wenchu, a prominent Chinese-American poet known as the Chinese Robert Frost, for her doctoral dissertation. Ingrid is dissatisfied that she's been tasked with writing about someone who has already been so broadly studied. Her funding is running out, and Xu is a subject that has really fallen out of fashion. But when Ingrid discovers a note in the Xu archives on a visit to the library, she's led down a path which makes her realize the beloved poet was not who he claims he was. Soon, Ingrid is on a collision course with uncovering the truth, which means reckoning with white supremacy, institutional bias, and academic competition. This is a book for fans of books that take place in academic settings, readers who like to analyze and dissect what really lies at the heart of higher education. I absolutely love the writing on a sentence level in this novel. It's beautiful, deliberate, and clever. And I think if you look at the cover, it sort of does a disservice to the book. It actually looks like a very different kind of book than it is. But nonetheless, you shouldn't judge a book by a cover. So thank you to the Penguin Group and to NetGalley for the advanced review copy. And again, that's Disorientation by Elaine Shea Chow. Sarah, what do you have next?
The next book I have is 1984 by George Orwell. George Orwell was an author I read quite a lot growing up. We read Animal Farm at school and Down and Out in Paris and London. But 1984 is a dystopian social science fiction, and it centers on the consequences of mass surveillance and a repressive society. And it's a book that's really stuck with me. It's quite dark, but it's a classic and will forever be timeless and relevant, and the way it is reflecting in our world reflects our world today. I also found it crazy that George Orwell wrote this book in the 1940s, but the subject matter and the Big Brother is so relevant in today's society. It's almost like he predicted the future. 1984 by George Orwell.
My next pick is Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in Three Drafts by Matt Bell, and this came out March 8th. So Matthew Bell is a writing instructor and author, most recently of the book of fiction Appleseed, which was a New York Times notable work of fiction. And his most recent book, Refuse to Be Done, is a must-read for writers at any stage in their career. As an author and writing instructor myself, I was thrilled to read Bell's methods for moving through three drafts of a novel. To be honest, I highlighted so much of this advanced review e-copy that I'm definitely going to have to go out and purchase a hard copy. If you're a writer looking to maximize and economize your writing time, this is a book you're going to want to own. Suggestions range from committing to 500 words a day, which would yield 2,500 words a week, which would in turn yield 30,000 by the end of a semester. Bell stresses the importance of an outline, something I've only recently come to consider vital to my own writing practice, and he includes some unorthodox methods for getting through, particularly a second draft, which at first seemed radical, but I'm kind of leaning into his ideas more and more. I love how Bell uses so many outside literary sources and advice from writers, and I will definitely be visiting all of the works cited as a means to further my knowledge of creative writing. The name of the game is moving forward when it comes to writing, and Bell has successfully motivated me to keep doing so. Thank you to Soho Press and NetGalley for the advanced review copy. And again, that is Refuse to Be Done, How to Write and Rewrite a Novel in 3 Drafts by Matt Bell. Sarah, what is your final pick today?
Yeah, my final pick is a classic, Matilda by Roald Dahl. I loved Roald Dahl as a child, and I recently reread it with my 7-year-old daughter, and she is now hooked. I think she read like 5 of his books in the last few weeks. But Matilda is so magical and so inspirational, and she keeps referencing it. So I think it's one that really stands out. And also the illustrator, Quentin Blake, is a huge reason why I love these stories. Like, they're such magical, whimsical illustrations that really bring the book to life. So that book is Matilda by Roald Dahl.
I was always so amazed at how simple his illustrations look. And then I remember as a kid trying to emulate them, and I'm like, oh, this is a lot more complicated than it looks.
It definitely is. Yeah, he has a very unique style.
Well, thanks for sharing your picks with us. What are you going to read next?
I recently bought Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. I've heard very good reviews, so I'm excited to get into that one.
I've heard amazing things about that book. I'm going to be reading Memphis by Tara M. Stringfellow, about the legacy of a Black family in Memphis. And I don't know much else about it, except it's on a lot of people's highly anticipated book list. So I'm excited. Sarah, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, so I have an Instagram at Boccacini Meadows. That's at BOCCACCINI. MEADOWS. And I also have Facebook under the same name, and a website, www.boccacinimeadows.com.
And I will leave a link to all of Sarah's social media accounts on the show notes section of the podcast. So go and follow Sarah. Her art will just make you so happy. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Lovely. Thank you so much for having me.
I'll be back in 2 weeks with A.E. Copenhaver, author of My Days of Dark Green Euphoria. And until then, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.